This is the Talking Split Podcast.
Welcome, coaches, once again to the Talking Split Podcast. I am Rob Coulter, joined today, Zoe Carr, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you in. Nathan Cooper-Brown, welcome.
Good to see you guys.
Fantastic to have you both. Apologies if there is a bit of noise in the background. There is some building works going on behind us. It's not Coops falling asleep in his chair after one heck of a weekend. There is a little bit of building work going on behind us at the State Basketball Centre, which hopefully will be unveiled fairly soon. We are back for another week. If you could do us a massive favour and hit that subscribe button on the podcast platform you listen to, harder than a Zoe Carr moving screen, would be very helpful to help share and grow the podcast with everyone. We do appreciate all the likes, shares, the retweets, the comments, and all those types of things that do come through. Reminder, you can slide into the DMs on X or Instagram using the handle at Talking Split, or you can shoot me an email. What's been funny is have had a few emails in over the last couple of weeks. Nearly every person has mentioned, hey, hope you've caught up on your emails after you've come back from leave. And for those counting, no, I have not. I feel like Ash Arnold in admin land at the moment. It's just a mile behind. If you've sent me an email, I will come back to you at some stage.
The difference is you care about the fact that you need to get back to those emails.
True. Should have just gone the whole out of office, hey, thanks for your email. This will be deleted.
Yeah.
If it's important, send it back to me once I get back. But I am working through them. I am getting to everyone. So a couple of exciting things in the works, which we might talk about a little bit, a couple of weeks' time. One thing we do have coming up, though, there's only a few episodes left of Talking Split for this year because you two are going on a US tour with the BV group. Talk us through a little bit of that, Zoe.
Yeah, so I originally wasn't on this tour. I got sort of thrown in last minute after Jenny Screen decided she wanted to leave us for greener pastures, so thanks for that, Jenny.
Greener pastures. She's referencing the grass as opposed to the wooden basketball court. Not because AFL is a better sport than basketball.
No.
So, yeah, heading to – we're about 3 weeks over to the US. We've got a boys' team and a girls' team heading to Dallas and DC, and we're playing some high schools over there. So a combination of some single standalone games and some tournaments, and then – going and watching some NBA and NCAA and, a bit of sightseeing and things like that. So, yeah, should be good fun.
What's DC stand for, Coops?
District Capital?
District of Columbia.
Yeah. Thought you were going to go with the capital.
I love that you just gave him props and it was wrong.
Yeah, even better.
It's my guy. It's my guy right there. Yeah. I could have said anything.
Yeah. He's Little John. He's your hype man.
Yeah, that's it.
Anything to get you up and going, Coops. You've been on tons of these trips, Coops, as well. What are your sort of memories, I suppose, of taking other tours in the past, and what are you anticipating for this one?
Yeah, this one's really about just the first chance for us to get back over there. So especially for Zoe, myself and Darren, to be able to take a group to the States, show them the experience of playing the game over there, what the game means to their culture, have them experience some NBA games, some different things like that. That's what this thing is. It's an experience tour that we've been speaking about for a while, and the hope is to shift it from an experience tour to more of a practical tour going into our next cycle, where maybe we take an older group to some AAU tournaments in July where they can be recruited, then keep our MPP grad tour in roughly August, September, and then importantly take some younger groups to Europe around this time. So, yeah, we'll get them over there, get to show them the experience. It's a lot of fun. Yeah, having been on a few, you get to be in a really fun environment. A lot of these kids don't get to just be basketballers for 3 weeks. They don't get to just experience something cool like, the States for a full 3 weeks. So being around them and seeing the smiles and creating some stories and some memories is really cool.
Absolutely. You did touch on a little bit of a Euro flavour there with a potential group going over to the States, which has happened before. So BV took a group to Spain. I'll say it was pre-COVID. That's all I can really remember off the top of my head. It was organised.
I think it was 2019, wasn't it?
Yeah, it might have been. Yeah. I know Mike Zeppel organised it, then left before it actually got to happen. So Ash was about 30 seconds into the job and was responsible for two teams worth of players going over to Spain. But, I mean, it's something, to be honest, that we've spoken about a little bit at BV Land in particular, about a little bit of a coach's study tour. And obviously there's a lot of things that are very accessible in the States and those types of things. We are looking a little bit... and it is long-term, so it'll be probably this time next year. But we are considering taking like a coach's study tour over to the States as well. So if that is something that anyone is interested in, flick me an email and just share your expression of interest essentially in that space. No idea what it would cost. Where would you find it? Like, none of that has been planned. It's more to see, is there interest out there for coaches that want to go? For me, there absolutely is. I would do bad, bad things to be able to go and hang in Spain for a couple of weeks and go and watch basketball. But that's kind of thing. So if you are interested in getting involved in that, by all means, shoot us an email and we'll put you on the list. If we manage to get this up and over the line and we feel that we've got 35 people going, we'll book out the next flight to Spain and go from there. And, you know, if no one wants to go, we'll
still go.
Yeah.
We're hanging on the beach. It's just how it rolls. So that's one thing that we're talking about. Next year we are also starting, and this is a little bit of warning because I know not everyone is a fast reader. We are going to start a little bit of a Talking Split book club for next year. A little bit of Joan Calamezzo about that, that you can sort of jump in and we'll give the stamp of approval to.
That's an excellent reference.
Great reference. Yeah,
Parks and Rec, get on that one, coaches out there. But it is something that we kind of like to be able to share with other people out there. I know we've done a podcast on it ages ago about like a resource show, I think it was that we did, and it was all about like books we read, podcasts we listen to, handles that we follow, those types of things. The book club one is one that we kind of try and get a little bit more consistent, I suppose. So here's your warning, coaches. Start reading now. If you have a book that you've liked, by all means, you can send that in. We'll put the whole segment together, so to speak, seeking sponsors, if anyone wants to sponsor the book club as well. And we'll put it out there for other coaches to listen to. So that is something that we are planning for next year. So it'll be November by the time this thing drops. But so you've got 2 months to start reading, 3 months even, because I'm tipping we're not going to be back in January. So 3 months to start reading books, start putting your notes together. If you liked it, if you didn't like it, would you give it thumbs up, thumbs down, 4 thumbs down, either way, depending on which way you want to go with it. It's something we want to try and get out there to coaches as well. Coots, what would your first book be?
Oh, geez, that's a tough one. Win Forever, Pete Carroll. That's a staple. Yeah, I love that book. Great for coaches. Yeah.
Yep. Zoe?
I'm looking at the Angela Merkel biography. So I don't think you have to necessarily – it doesn't necessarily have to be a basketball book. No. It can be something about leadership. It can be about life. It can be anything that you read that you think is relative to – sort of transfer some skills or some little parts that you take out of it. So that's one that I really want to try and get to. I'm going to preface it. You're not going to hear a lot of books from me because I'm a terrible reader. As soon as I get one page in and I either fall asleep or just lose interest. So I'm going to try my best for the pod. But yeah. If anyone's got any real captivating books for me, that would be great.
Dr. Seuss. It might be all we can get it through. Like
today I read Green Eggs and Ham.
Yeah, that might be the level. We'll start you small and just build out. Like there are some books out there that have got like dot points per page and those types of things that might captivate you, because not everyone will read the same way, to be completely fair. There's an app, Headway. Which is to be fair, it's a paid app, but it condenses effectively books into like 15-minute little reads. So every now and again, I'll go through, see something I like, read that. If I really like it, then I'll go and grab the book and sort of expand from there. So there are other ways around it. You don't have to go.
Well, it wouldn't be a pod if I didn't start talking about stoicism, would it, guys? So
you know. Without a doubt. You think by now we've got a drop for it. Yeah, I don't even know what it would sound like. Like something at a 300 maybe? Or
Marcus Aurelius's Meditations.
Yep.
Can't go past it. The beauty of it was that it's not actually a book. It's a copy of his journal, basically, from, you know, almost 2,000 years ago. So it doesn't have a start to finish. You know, you can kind of jump in, can jump out. It really is written in kind of dot points. So his thoughts going down about what he experienced that day or some mistakes that he made that he wanted to rectify. So if you are looking for something a little bit maybe self-helpy, but again, don't want to sit down and go cover to cover, highly, highly recommend.
That's a winner for me because when I fall asleep, I lose my page and then it makes me not want to read the book anymore. So that's a winner.
And what a segue too. We're talking about things that have maybe gone wrong and you could learn from and adapt. Coops has just laid the foundation for it. Like a full court pass in transition to a running big. We are talking today about mistakes we've made in coaching and more importantly, how we fix them or things to rectify as well. And this is obviously a bit of an uncomfortable topic for a lot of coaches because they don't love talking about, yeah, I screwed that up and those types of things. And even recognizing when you've made mistakes, like that reflection side of things, is a difficult one for a lot of coaches to talk about because, believe it or not, we do make mistakes. Like we may not admit that publicly all the time, but we do make mistakes. I still remember it was one of, can't remember exactly if it was a World Cup or an Olympic Games, but I remember Brian Gorgian coming out afterwards and said, yeah, I mucked up. I shouldn't have called this time out. That was my mistake. And it was a real sort of light bulb moment because it was early on in my coaching as well. It's like, oh, coaches can do this. And I think we are starting to see a little bit more humility with a lot of coaches out there as well and say, yeah, look, we're not perfect. We do make errors as coaches. But what we're going to try and get through today is a few of our mistakes to hopefully stop you from making them in the first place. But also, it's a little bit of group therapy for us as well, that we can get a little bit of stuff off our chest that that potentially hasn't gone the best over the years. So I'll start off on this one. One of the biggest mistakes I made was being far too heavily involved in X's and O's. And it's all about, I have to have the best play that will work for the best moment in time. And I'm going to be one of those cerebral coaches that is like, yeah, I look like I've got everything under control because I've got an option for this and a counter for that and then a play for that, and this offense is unguardable by anybody. And realistically, it's all false. Like, it's, you know, X's and O's are nice. I'm not saying discount them completely, but the reality is it's not the be-all and end-all. Like, have you experienced something like that, Coops? Like, is that something you've gone through?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I remember sitting down with Guy Malloy and we were talking about that whole concept of, you know, be great at a few things, not okay at a lot of things. And that just never stuck. And I love Guy, and he's
good
been
chat.
Yeah, and he's been a great influence on me. And that was just one of the things that it took me such a long time to get my head around, in that I always was just adding more, you know, getting halfway through a season and doing some research or watching a EuroLeague game. Oh, I love that wrinkle and I'm going to put that in, or I love that play, I'm going to put that in. And then I remember not that long ago trying to justify it in my head, where I'm like, okay, no, I'm going to put that in, but I'll take that out, thinking like that's how easy it was. I could just go into my athletes' heads and be like, remember that play that we were doing? Just get rid of that. Don't remember that anymore. And now remember this new play. And of course, all I'm doing is adding more information and confusing them. So it's been a real process of trying to break out of that. Like, I know more than everybody, and I can add this, and if I add that, and then I can be the smartest coach, and I'll be able to, it's because it's not what I know, it's what the players can execute. And that was a huge mistake for a long, long time in my coaching.
Yep. So if you had that same experience, because you obviously came from the playing background straight into coaching, pretty much, like, it was instantaneous essentially for you. Did you have a similar issue in that, you know, you've come out of seniors, I can remember all this, now I'm coaching juniors, why can't you?
Yeah, I had that, and I've told the story about the famous timeout before.
Nails, yep.
Real quick for those that may not, if we've got some new listeners, basically I was coaching a bottom age under 12s team in my first year, and we're in a timeout and I'm on the whiteboard, and in my head I am nailing this timeout. Like, it is legit. I've got, you know, I'm drawing up this play and you're going here and you're going here and da, 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 da. Got it? And they're all nodding away and I'm like, they're engaged. I've got this. This is going to be great. So we put our hands in, and then my niece of all kids stands up and says, Annie Zoe, have you had your nails done? And I just in that moment realised that was far too complicated and I probably lost them within the first 5 seconds of talking. And keeping that, you know, trying to keep it simple, trying to keep it to the level. And when I say at the level, probably just outside or just above what they're capable of, just to keep it interesting, to keep them developing, all those sort of things. But there was also – I was also a bit of a victim of, you know, we'd run an offense, it wouldn't – or have an offense or a system or something in play and it wouldn't work for a couple of games. So I'd find a whole new one and put it in, and I just keep adding. And by the end of it, this under 16s team that I'm coaching has a playbook thicker than the Bible. And you know, but again, because I can remember it, because that's what we used to do in WNBL and all that stuff, because I can remember it, you should be able to remember it too. And not having that understanding of, you know, athlete development and even just adolescent development, from a cognitive perspective, what they are actually able to retain and understand and then implement and all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I was definitely a victim of making it far too complicated too early for athletes and not at their level.
And easy to do. Like, honestly, I remember coaching in an under-18 boys team and saw, ironically enough, a Golden State Warriors play, and it's like, oh, that's nice. And one, don't have Steph. Didn't have Clay, and we had some people that probably had the mouth of Draymond, but not necessarily the physical output. It'd be fair to say. And it's like, oh, you know, this is a nice little counter. It was for a little bit of a sort of lob play that was just looked cool. And it's like, yeah, I reckon I can run that with our team. And like, we're putting it in. It's like, something's not right. The timing's off. The spacing, like, something is just not going well. And pigheadedly, I just persisted with it. I reckon we lost 6 weeks of me just like, no, this will work. I've seen it work. Why doesn't it work? It just didn't work because, you know, different teams, different makeups, different structures. But instead, I got so invested in the X's and O's stuff that I wasn't really thinking about why it didn't work. There's a great, I can't remember where I've seen it. And we are talking like a decade or so ago because it was Manu Ginobili and Tony Parker. There was like a little action they ran that was effectively just like a give and go. They got layup after layup after layup on it. And it's like, this is so simple. Why doesn't everyone else do this? And it's like, well, not everyone else has the same chemistry or the same makeup that those two have together. So you can't run the same stuff.
Yeah, and it's also a case of, you know, eventually your athletes, depending on their age, may have been able to pick up that offense to be successful in it. But who you're watching before the season, if it's NBA, train every day, you know, if not twice a day. So they've got the time to be able to really perfect those little things, those little sort of nuanced sort of, you know, timing and, you know, finesse and look here, but it's actions here and all that sort of stuff. They have the time to get that done. You got a 45-minute half court once a week. Not being able to put in a full system. Like, and again, that was something I didn't understand. Yeah. I couldn't figure out why it wasn't working and why they weren't able to retain it. And ultimately, the reason they couldn't was because of me.
Yeah, and part of that too is like one of the reasons it wasn't working is because I don't have Steph and Clay. So the spacing's not the same because they're not hugging them on the three-point line where all the whole defense is drawn away from it. But I didn't understand that at the time. Like I wasn't seeing it for what it is and I was seeing it for what I hoped it would be down the stretch. And naturally my solution was, all right, scrap that. New offense is going in that's not that. It's like, yeah, good job, genius. Like,
I think a mistake I made with that as well, with the X's and O's and things, was being worried about being judged about what I was running. So, you know, I had to, like you were saying, you know, be this cerebral coach and all this sort of stuff. I wasn't necessarily thinking that, but I was thinking, you know, are people going to judge me because of, you know, we're not running an offense that's, you know, pretty enough or, you know, fancy enough or, you know, has all these actions and all that sort of stuff. They're gonna think I'm a basic coach and I don't know what I'm doing. And to be honest, I didn't know what I was doing, so probably pretty fitting. But
well, the irony is basic is usually better.
Yeah.
Like it's just how it rolls.
Yeah, but it was sort of, yeah, that worry of being judged by other people when – and look, to be honest, it's something Coops and I are working really hard throughout the country system to try and change, but – there probably are people that are going to judge you for what you do and don't run and, you know, the way you coach and this, that and the other. But ultimately the majority aren't. They couldn't care. They're probably just, you know, waiting for their game or ready to leave or, you know, all that sort of stuff. They probably couldn't care less.
Yep. That very valid point. All right, on to the next one. And you sort of touched on it a little bit before, Coops, because when you were saying you spoke to Guy about things, asking for help but then not actioning it. Now, I'm not suggesting you didn't action it before, but it is one of those things where sometimes you have a chat, you ask someone for their time, they give you their opinion, and I'm not saying you have to action everything because not everything is right, but if you're going to ask someone for their help, you got to try and at least put it into place. And depending on the point in your coaching journey, I suppose, you're at, you may not be ready to hear that advice, so there's an element to it, and it is that whole, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear type thing. It can go a little bit that way too, but
that's deep.
Shamelessly stolen from a movie. but it is something too that if you're going to ask for help as a coach, you got to do something about it. And it, like, have you had that experience, Coops, where it's, you know, hey, this coach has asked, I've told him, but it's not changing?
Yeah, there was a lot of early points in my career, and I've been very lucky to be around and have access to a lot of high level thinkers and, you know, renowned coaches in our community, and I'm very grateful for that. And early on it was, okay, I'm probably just really asking them things because I'm trying to generate a relationship. I'm trying to figure some things out about, you know, who they are and what they're doing and what they're seeing. And then, you know, ask them a question and then basically just shut off. And be like, oh yeah, they're talking to me. Okay, cool, you know. I must have asked a good question.
I'll just wait for them to stop talking so I can talk again.
Yeah, like, you know, exactly. And And that's where it got to. And that was definitely a mistake. It's, you know, when you really want that feedback, you know, there's a whole process around, you know, what am I asking? You know, what am I going to do with that information? You know, am I going to sit down and reflect upon it? Am I going to be able to kind of go through that information, decipher it a little bit? I remember one of my mentors came and watched us have a practice game in NBL 1, and I had them sit right next to me on the bench because I was like, I want you right here. I want you, you know, listening to all the information. And then she took all those notes and we went through it afterwards, which was really valuable. And probably every third point that she'd made was valid, but not valid based on what we'd been working on at practice. So there was a very clear understanding of, okay, what am I asking? What am I looking for? But I know that I'm not taking everything verbatim, but I'm also not, you know, shutting off and not listening to it. So yeah, the mistake I think is a lot of times in asking for feedback is not thinking beyond what the information is. There's this whole process that goes towards, okay, who am I asking? What am I asking for? How am I going to go away and create a plan to use it? And that takes time, and not necessarily people are ready to invest that time when it comes to creating mentors and relationships. And that can be a big mistake, and definitely one that I've had in the past.
And it's one of those things too where I think as probably basketball coaches, we would ask for someone to help us out with basketball related things. It doesn't have to be basketball related. It could be on how you communicate, what's your body language like. That could be the feedback that you're asking for or the help that you're asking for. But again, you've got to do something with it. Like, you know, someone that is, as an example, a primary school teacher is going to walk in with no knowledge of basketball whatsoever and say, yeah, I don't know that I love your on-ball screen coverage in that middle pick and roll. That's not going to be their forte potentially, but how you communicate and how your players are learning and responding to you, that might be something that they can offer you some feedback on. So you have to be a little bit careful about how you ask, I suppose. Like, Zoe, you've had a lot of good people around you, present company excluded, sadly. What have you asked of your mentors in that sort of space?
First of all, I would not be where I am today without mentors, and mostly, pains me to say, probably you, Rob, because when I remember it as clear as day, it was at Eltham High. I was coaching against, I won't say the club, but I was coaching against a team, was it with that little under 12s team. And I didn't have any sort of mentor. I didn't, cause at that stage I didn't think I was going to be a coach. I thought I was just doing it so my niece could play a sport that I loved to play and, you know, wanted her to be able to be involved. So I didn't really think this was going to be a path. So I didn't really, you know, sort of put much time into finding anybody to help me or anything like that. But there was an incident where I went to shake the opposition coach's hand and he just blew right past me and shook. And it turned out to be the, one of the dads that was just sitting near the bench, their hand, thinking he was the coach rather than me. That really hurt. Like that really hurt me because it was like, I'm working my butt off. I'm up coaching these kids. I'm trying to teach them all the right, what I thought were the right things, which is something we'll get to probably a bit later. And you treat me like that, you know, like, and so I wanted to walk away. And you were there at that game and you basically grabbed me and that was, you know, the beginning of becoming a coach. So I put it down to that very moment. And the thing was though, I think it happens with a lot of female, not just subject to female coaches, but happens definitely a lot with female coaches. There's an insecurity, a real insecurity. So we struggle, one, asking for feedback and two, receiving it. Anyone that knows Rob knows he's as subtle as a sledgehammer. So
it's actually coming up a little bit later. My sense of humour is not necessarily for everyone. It's a little bit dark and dry.
Yeah, but not even that. Not even from a sense of humour perspective. If you're going to ask someone like Rob for help, then you need to hear what he has to say. And I wasn't ready for that. So I thought I was asking for help, and it's something I'm noticing a lot in kids too. I wasn't really asking for help. I wanted him to tell me I was doing well, and he didn't. And I struggled to hear that. And again, that was stemmed from my insecurity. But the mark of a great mentor is he noticed that again, that hurt, how much that hit me, that, you know, he basically just listed off all the things I was doing wrong. And then worked with me to make him better rather than, here's your list, see you later. So that was, you know, I then saw the value of mentors and what they can do. But again, from that insecurity, I got to a point where then I'd ask for some feedback, I'd get it, and then I felt I had to justify everything. So I'd be like, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but. And I always say to coaches all the time, don't be a yeah, but coach. Just listen to it. And as you both said before, you know, you don't have to agree with it. You can, you know, you can walk away and take some. It's like what we say to kids sometimes, like, take some, reject others, you know, whatever it is. But, you know, if someone's going to give you their time, don't – it's not a debate. Like, it's – you can have a conversation, of course, but, you know, it stemmed from my insecurity that I wanted him to know that I had a plan for that and it just didn't work, or, you know, I knew what I was doing and, you know, all that sort of stuff, rather than just listening to what was being said and then sort of how to fix it. Because in that time that I'm saying, yeah, but this, I probably could have got the answer of how to fix it, but I was too busy talking.
Well, and the hard part too, I think, is that it is such a snapshot. Like, I mean, go back to what we were sort of talking about before with you, Coops. Like, if someone comes in and says, hey, your on-ball screen coverage is no good in that middle pick and roll, yeah, okay, it may not be, but it's better than where it was 3 weeks ago. I think the difficult part is that, okay, it's not a slight on you. It's not not blaming you or holding you personally responsible for it. It's someone that's come in with no prior knowledge, seen what they've seen, and in that moment, that's what they're giving you. If you're asking about, say, your coaching philosophy, well, okay, yeah, that's going to be unpacked for a lot longer, but in a game situation or a training situation, it really is just a moment in time. And now, who knows? Your on-ball coverage might be great, but one player screws it up once, but that's what sticks in their head, those types of things. So, I mean, I think you both nailed it. It's not a fight. It's if you're going to ask, we'll expect it.
Yeah, and I mean, it goes with selection too. You know, I'm at some camps.
And this whole thing, I've put down all of the mistakes we've made. I haven't put team selection in there once. Well, I'm just looking down the list.
Nailed it.
Yeah, so they haven't done that. It's a couple I regret.
But no, I've been lucky enough to be able to have some experiences where you're under the pump to pick the right team, and, you know, you get to that last sort of game where it's their last chance to make or break, and you're pretty sure you know what you're doing, and then someone walks in who has not watched any of the camp and says, oh, well, surely you're picking her. Well, no, she's just having one good little, and it might even just be a couple of minutes. That's the most she's done for the whole camp, or, you know, those sort of things. So it's also, I think, a mistake I made, was not building up the confidence in myself earlier to stand by what decisions I made or didn't make. I always felt like I had to sort of, again, justify everything or people please and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, just to be able to stand up and say, no, I actually don't really agree with that, and have that conversation of, you know, and you can have these great conversations. Like, someone said to me not long ago, they'd been in a course with you, Rob.
This never goes well.
And he said to me, how do you guys go at home with the conversation on how you close out? Because you both have different theories. I was like, well, it's not a problem. It's not something we talk about often. Yeah. But
not a hill I'm dying on either.
Yeah. But when you can disagree with things and have a conversation, and there's parts of, like, using that particular element, for example, there's parts of that I've gone, actually, no, I like that. I'm going to take that and put it and mesh it with what I've got, you know, rather than, no, I'm just going to shut myself off completely and this is what I do and all that sort of stuff. But those conversations, I think it's healthy, and early, again, because I was so insecure with who I was and not confident who I was as a coach, I didn't want to be around anyone that didn't agree with me. because I just wanted to be like, yeah, no, I fit in, and you know, all these people think the same as me, and that's great because that means I'm right, and you know, all that sort of stuff. Whereas realizing that one of the best things for my coaching was realizing that sort of debate, and obviously those conversations have to be handled in a particular way. You know, you don't come in and call someone an idiot for what they think and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, that sort of debate and those sort of conversations are actually really healthy, and that's where you learn and grow and become better as a coach. They're the things I've found the most beneficial to me as a coach.
Boring if you always agree too.
Yeah.
Like it's like every now and again you want to test your theory on something. It's like, well, I think this because of this, and have someone come back and try and unpack it. I suppose it's kind of one of the fun
things. Yeah, I mean, that's why you go to those people, right? Those people that you trust and those people that, you know, have been around the game, is because you want to have your ideas challenged and go through that debate and that, you know, those robust discussions. But when I'm listening to you guys talk there, I'm thinking about some key themes that are coming up in like self-belief, self-awareness, vulnerability and humility, and thinking about a lot of mistakes, especially that I made, go back to that, you know, that lack of time spent with myself in understanding where I am in my journey, what do I know, what don't I know, where do I need to get better, where do I need to be more humble, where do I need to be more, not necessarily aggressive, but trusting of myself. And I think more time coaches can spend in that space and just sitting down and being with yourself and writing out some notes and just checking in with where you're at is going to help them get out in front of some of those things.
Yep, absolutely. There was a clinic I watched years ago. I think it was one of the Coaching You clinics, and it was, I think, Lawrence Frank and Flip Saunders were both on court with each other. And essentially, one would put an offense in and then the other would come in and say, well, here's how I'm defending it. So then the offensive guy was on the clock again. And it's like, hey, so if you're going to defend it that way, this is what I do now. And so the defense got, and it just went back and forth.
It was fun.
It was so much fun. Yeah. But even just watching how they dealt with each other, it was never you got me on that one, or you've got me one, or I hate you because you've managed to. It was all fun. Like it was like, hey, crafty, I like that. So if you're going to do that, here's what I'm going to do there. And it just evolved into this great clinic that was fantastic to watch. And it was just really interesting watching two coaches who are obviously very highly respected go about their craft. And I think that's something that, you know, as coaches, we don't always do. Like, we need to ask for help, sure, but we've got to do something with it once we get it too. All right, the next one I've got on here, which I think can apply for nearly every coach under the sun, got the wrong team manager. Sometimes you throw it out to the parent group at the start and you say, hey, who would like to be team manager? And like four or five people run for the door. The other four or five people battle it out to say, oh, you know, I'll do it if no one else will, but I'd really like someone else to do it. And you end up with someone that might have all the right intentions, but not necessarily the right skill set to essentially deal with it. There are times you need a good team manager. Like there's no way around it, honestly. They're worth their weight in gold. If you can get someone that you trust, that is a good communicator, that puts out fires before they get to you, those types of things, they are so valuable. And it's the ability to not make it about themselves. It's like, yes, you are a team manager, and in a lot of ways you are probably the most important person to this team, but also remember where your role sits, which is you're not more important than the players. You're probably not more important than the head coach, despite what some may think that I've had over the years. Like that's you got to find your piece there, because they can solve a lot of problems, but they can cause a lot of problems too. Like, have you had good or bad experiences on that one, Zoe?
Yeah, I did that exact thing of just, oh, please, anybody, be a team manager, and got a real nightmare. So where you say had the best intentions, did not have the best intentions, had an agenda, and it caused a real divide, not only between myself and the other parents, but between the parents and them, and then started to seep through to the athletes. So that was a real eye-opening moment for me, where it was like, no, I'm picking the team manager from now on and saying, I need you to be the team manager, please. So yeah, that was a tough way to find that out. But yeah, I would suggest to anybody And it's not, they're not all like that. Like there can also be team managers that, you know, you still have problems with them, but it's for completely different reasons. Like their communication's not up to where it needs to be, or, you know, those sort of, the organization's not where it needs to be, and the, and those sort of things. So they're not all sort of hellish experiences like what I had. But that's just, yeah, that's the experience I had. And from then on, I've never once left it up to the parents. I've always targeted somebody and asked them directly, knowing who they are and how they go about things. And yeah, and it's been pretty successful to that point.
What about you, Coops? How have you gone about finding the right person to be a team manager?
Yeah, I've been lucky because I haven't been coaching in the junior space for a while in terms like of being in charge of a team, like a VJBL team. So shout out to my last few team managers who have all been awesome. Darren, Neil, Kira, those guys, thank you for putting up with me. But when I was a DOC, we were very conscious of that, and especially the community we were in. And when names came through our administrator to myself, I was straight away asking questions. It wasn't like, oh yeah, this person's put their hand up for team manager. It wasn't like, oh yeah, and just tick it off. Yeah. You know, it was like, okay, talk to me. Like, who are they? What are they about? Where's their kid in the pecking order? You know, all these little, you know, bits and pieces that we know are going to potentially create the personality of what this person's like on the sidelines. We had to go through that process because we got burnt, especially I think it was my first year. There was a couple of parents that caused real problems around coaching their kid from the sideline, undermining the head coach with other parents. So it's exactly what Zoe's saying. Like, if you don't do your due diligence in that space, it can really come back and bite you.
It is. And you want someone that's invested but not too invested. Like, they need to have that level of separation, but they also need to be able to be talked to by the kids and the players. Like, if a kid comes off and they've really worked up and you've got a team manager at the benches, it's a very calming influence that can sort of settle them back down. Great spot to be in. Like, that's what you really need. You don't need them sitting there saying, hey, how come you didn't run this offense when you're on court? Like that's going to cause you some problems. So just trying to find the balancing act between that. Like, my last team manager was phenomenal. Like, honestly, she's like, hey, do you even want me on the bench? I'm like, not particularly. Like, if you don't need to be there, don't worry about it. She's like, no, I'm pretty content, like, four rows back. Like, that's quite okay. She's like, as long as they got drink bottles, we're good. Like, do you need me to be in the shirt? No. Like, do what you want. Don't care. As long as everyone pays you and you can pay the team sheet, we're good. Like, I don't need anything more than that. And she was phenomenal at knowing which problems to tell me about, but which ones to keep away from me as well, where she put out a lot of fires before I had to even deal with it in that space. So team managers, worth their weight in gold.
Shout out to another one of my team managers who now actually just works across the way at BA, Karen, who came on board with our NBL 1 team, who knew nothing about basketball. She was coming from a netball background. And her willingness to learn about the game and go above and beyond and ask questions, but ask at the right time, like not like come up to me while I'm coaching being like, oh yeah, so what is that, you know? It was on the bus ride, oh hey, so you guys did this today, how does that relate? And took that information on to try and make herself a better team manager. So yeah, another shout out to one of the good ones.
Excellent. They are honestly the biggest problem solvers in your world if you can get that right, coaches. One that I think every coach has potentially been guilty of, staying off the refs. Like, I think we've all taken a couple of swipes that we sort of look back on over the years and go, yeah, that probably wasn't the best of ideas. It doesn't usually go well, it'd be fair to say, over the course. To be fair, not always on the coach. Like, I think there is a point there where there needs to be a bit of give and take between the two. And I don't know, I haven't coached for the last year or so I feel like that gap may be widening rather than coming close together. I would love to see more referee and coach collaboration in that space, because I think it's actually a really good thing. I tell a lot of people that go through coaching courses, go and do a ref course. Like, even if you don't become a ref, go through it, find out what it's like, even spend some time in a green shirt on court and just see if you like it. And if you like it, great. If you don't, cool, get it. But it is one of those areas where you've got to understand what the other person's going through. And similarly, a coach said to me in a course just on the weekend, like, yeah, but refs don't understand what we go through as coaches. I was like, valid. Okay, they don't. Like, to be completely fair, they don't unless they do some coaching themselves. So I would say it goes the other way, that I do think that referees should do coaching courses to see what we teach, why we teach it, those types of things. Because I look back at the best refs we've had over the years, they've all had a pretty good understanding of what basketball is and how it's taught and how it's learned their players and those types of things. So, yeah, I certainly have been no angel over the years, unfortunately, with referees, but it's something I'm trying to get better at for those times where I do have to jump back on court. I don't know when that'll be at this stage. I don't anticipate it'll be anytime soon, but it is one of those things that we do have to cut the referee some slack on that too. Accurate, Coops?
Yeah, very
much. You're nodding, but I'm not sure you completely believe it.
No, I truly believe that, you know, and of course I've made multiple mistakes of you know, inappropriately talking with the referees and, you know, getting upset at calls and all those sorts of things. But I think that comes with a level of insecurity. You know, I think if you're that insecure in your coaching and your group that the outcomes of games are so heavily impacted by the referees, you know, you've got some you got to look at yourself in the mirror a little bit. Like, yes, are there going to be calls that are going to impact games? Yep, 100%. But at the end of the day, it's, you know, it really should just come back down to the person that you are on the sideline, the belief you have in your team, the belief of the impact that you can make from being a coach. That should trump all.
What about you, Zoe?
Oh, damn, I was hoping you weren't going to enter me into this conversation. No, I completely agree in theory, in practice. I'm not good at it yet. And
it's something I think we all know, though.
Yeah.
But it's just when it gets to the game, yeah, it's harder.
And it's one of the things I have down is one of the mistakes I made is, and it's, and I haven't coached well since taking, game coach, sorry, since taking this role. So it'll be interesting on the US tour to see how that goes.
She's going to be on the elbow screaming at someone.
No, but it's one of those things, you know, I particularly, and us as coaches, sit there and preach, you know, don't worry about it, what's next? You know, you've made an error, what's next? What's next? What's next? And I think where I was getting on the referees was a couple of reasons. One, because you're working your butt off throughout the week to, you know, upskill, whether it's junior or seniors, upskill the athletes, you know, put plans in place and do all of this stuff and show them, especially when it's like a skill set thing. You know, you teach like an up fake and a step through and they call a travel and then the kid looks at you and you're like, no, it's not a travel. But then, so I think I felt...
White knuckle gripping the table, yeah. When she was saying that.
But I think I felt like I had to go into bat to prove that what I was teaching was correct or that the plan was correct or, you know, all those sort of things. Or just to back my players as well, because we don't want to... have it seen that, you know, oh, well, you're on your own. Like we've spoken about it before. One of the things that really drives me crazy is when teams are down, coaches stop coaching. That similar thing, like, you know, hey, I'm here for you and I agree with you and all that sort of stuff. Where instead, I should have been the face they needed to see. So when they look at that, you know, there's a call that is questionable or whatever, and they look at me, if they see me going, hey, no, what's next? Like just move on from it. They're more likely to do that. Instead, I think I fueled the emotion. But it wasn't because I just wanted – because I enjoy yelling at referees. I don't. I think it was just – yeah, I think it was I was just trying to fight for my players and fight for the work that myself and my staff had done throughout the week. And it's similar in, you know, game situations. It was a mistake that I made early. Was it to be like a tense situation, one up, one down, whatever it is, and we're in a timeout, and I'd be speaking a million miles an hour with so much emotion in my voice and like hyped up, ready to go, and I was projecting that. And I didn't realize that I was projecting like tense and, you know, adding to the situation being, you know, sort of, well, an intense situation, I was adding to that. So sort of rather than taking away, I was piling on. And again, it's being that face that they needed to see. I needed to be calm. I needed to be confident and show them that I was confident that whatever we draw up here, you're going to nail it. Like it's going to be great. And if you don't, oh well. Like it's, yeah, it's a similar sort of theory is, and it's one of the biggest mistakes that I think I've made throughout my coaching journey is, yeah, at times not being the face my athletes needed to see in a multitude of situations.
Yeah, that's body language as well as the verbal language in particular. Like how many times have we been irate about something that's gone wrong, and you know, we're just stressed and tense, and your players look at you like, oh, we're about to cop it here. Like, their anxiety goes up straight away, and it's like, hey, I don't need this. Like, they already feel bad enough. Like, the coach that chews out a player that's just throwing a turnover, that's just subbing out, they already feel bad. They don't need to hear it again. Yeah, they're already feeling like they're coming out because they've
made
a
mistake. What's the instruction? How do they fix it? Like, if you're telling them how to fix it, that's different. You know, you can, but getting, they know they've thrown the ball out of court. Like, they don't need you to tell them that. But it's also like when we talk about in the sort of refereeing sort of component of coaching courses as well, is also you might be, a ref might make a call and you don't agree with it and you put your head in your hands and, you know, because you're angry at the call. But your athlete looks at you. And they think, like, let's say they've failed, for example, they think or are seeing you in that position and they think, oh, they're angry at me. They don't know what's going on inside your head or what you're thinking or, you know, that sort of thing. So it can sort of snowball into a whole bunch of different areas that then become problems.
I want to go back a little bit. You were talking about like a player coming out that's made a mistake and the error and, you know, they know they've made the mistake and those types of things and how you communicate with that player. What about when there is just a distinct lack of effort from a player? Like, how do you go about addressing that with a player?
Are you asking me?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Giving Coots some time to think on this one.
Effort is completely different in my opinion. So errors are acceptable if you're at the level, your effort levels are where they need to be and all those sort of things. If you're simply not trying, and this can be dependent upon the age group, like especially if it's seniors, if you're not trying, you're not playing. Like, it's as simple as that. Because the others that are around you are, you know, we're all working towards something. If you've decided to clock off, but it's a come out of the game, take a deep breath, have a drink of water, then send an assistant coach down rather than the head coach that's in the throes of it that's probably, again, more hopped up on emotion, and just find out why. Like, what's going on? And it could be, again, multitude of different things. They could have an injury that they've hidden from us. They could be not feeling well. They could have had some things go on in their life, like, that, again, they, you know, haven't shared with us or anything like that. So then you can make a plan. You know, if it is an injury and you're lucky, you know, you're a senior team, you have a physio there and, you know, that gets assessed. If they're not feeling well, now you can have a conversation of, are you actually right to go back in? Because if you are, the levels, your effort levels need to be where we need them. If it's something to do with life, you might actually say, hey, are you in a space to play this game? You know, and they might say no. And even if they're your best player, you have to honor that. Because the physical and mental well-being of our athletes is never outweighed by a result. So you have to, and it might hurt because you might think, oh, if I just had that one player, it could have changed the entire outcome of the game. But having those conversations are really important, and again, it stems right back to your relationship with your athletes. But if it's just like a weekly thing where, you know, especially in juniors, and we see it a lot, the kid doesn't actually like basketball. They're just sort of being made to play. It's a conversation with the parents as to, is this for your family? You know, because, you know, they're not trying. What I can't – effort can't be driven by the – you can try, you can motivate, and you can do those sort of things, but ultimately effort has to come down to the athlete. So it'd be having a conversation with the parents and just sort of saying, hey, week to week – we're not seeing the effort levels. Does your son or daughter actually want to do this? Or do you have any ideas of how I can get them to, you know, get on board playing at the level we need them to play or giving the effort that they need to give?
What about you, Coops?
Yeah, very similar. Yeah, what sort of connection do I have with the athlete? How can I draw on that connection to find out what's going wrong, you know? And then the other piece would be the motivational interviewing. Yeah, have we gone through that process prior? So if it was a little bit more on the surface where I can tap back into that and say, hey, you said you wanted to be an NBL player. Are you giving us an NBL effort right now? Oh, no. Okay, well, I'm going to give you another chance. Let's see it. So you can kind of draw back on what they've said. But I think exactly how Zoe framed it is the most important part is, okay, what's the relationship like? What's the background like? Can we dig a little deeper into the why? So it's not just so much where, well, we're especially in terms of how we're relating to the topic of the pod, we're just not yelling at kids because we don't think that they're playing hard.
Yep. And that's not easy to do, obviously, because in the throes of a game, usually a lack of effort comes with a mistake somewhere or something that's gone wrong. And then you've seen like the shoulders slump, the head drop, the walk back on defense, those types of things. Sub comes, you're not normally happy about that sort of thing. So trying to find ways to balance your own emotional state out in that, and then maybe you need to give them a breath. Like, I'm really big on coaches, like, don't go and talk to them as they're coming out. Let them come out, let them sit down, let them get a drink, then talk to them if you need to. Let them sort of calm themselves, because we've all seen kids that probably get a little bit over emotional when they do make a mistake or something like that, and they're trying to catch their breath, their breathing becomes really rapid, not a lot of oxygen going to their head. Don't get great answers out of them, to be fair to say.
Well, they're also not taking anything in. They're not listening to you. They're just trying to live at that stage.
Yeah. Like, that's that fight or flight stuff that they get into straight away, and they're just thinking, I want out of this conversation as quickly as I can, so I'm going to give you all the answers that you want to hear so that you get out of here and I can be back in my own space. So it is a difficult one to get there, but we do need to regulate our emotions in that space in particular, which leads into have been far too focused on winning and not developing. And coaches, if you're not putting your hand up to this, you're lying. Like, you are lying so much in this. But it doesn't matter what game I've ever coached, I've always wanted to win it. It doesn't matter. I've always wanted to win it. But there have been times where I've absolutely sacrificed the development and what is right for the players to get a win. And I can't even remember the games they would have been in. Like, I just know they've happened. Like, I don't remember that win now in comparison to whenever it was. So there have been so many times where I've made a sub that it's like, yeah, this is probably the right sub to win the game, but he's not the right sub for the long-term impact on this player or the team in that sort of space. And that is obviously tied into referees. I mean, you touched on it as well, Coops, of course, because it is something that we put wholeheartedly into that. But the winning over development, like, there was, I don't know if you guys remember it, there was a time, it was when Lemanis was coaching the Brisbane Bullets, and he started double teaming the inbound. Yeah. Like, he'd put two players on that. It was a really sort of different sort of thing to look at. I was coaching bottom age under 12s at that point, and I had an opportunity to do that in a game when it was a really, it was like a 1 point game with like 5 seconds to go. And I had two tall kids. It's like, yeah, I'll just put them both on the inbound.
And it was Diamond Valley Court 3, wasn't it? Yeah, it was. So there's like no space on that sideline.
It's like, yeah, I'm going to do that. And I got really nervous. Like, nah, I can't do it. Like, I want to win the game. Like, if I just play it straight up, I'm going to win it. And it's like, no, this is an opportunity for me to try something new and develop and give them a different slant on things. And I couldn't do it. Like, I cheaped out. What do you do? Like, you're sometimes punk. It just happens. Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, hey, do what Rob does, except that. But it was that kind of thing where I was so caught up in the winning of a game that I forgot all the other stuff that we're trying to teach our kids to do. Like, have you had that similar sort of experience, Coops, or have you experienced it differently in that space?
Yeah, I have terrible white line fever.
I know, right?
I'm messing with you. I heard all our pod listeners then just start shaking their head and say no at the same time. No, it's true. Yep. Horrible white line fever. Every game I approach, I'm in a mindset that I'll be less competitive and be able to be a little bit more stoic and a little bit more focused, but I'll always hit that point during the game. And
should see him at home when he tries to play like Guess Who. Yeah. Like, no good. That's not what it was. You've moved your battleship.
Well, even just recently in Asia, and we were down to New Zealand in the gold medal game, and I was conscious of having our third time out, and the 2 minute mark was approaching, and it was a tight game, and I turned, I kind of got distracted. New Zealand scored and we quickly got the ball in, and I turned up and looked at the clock to see it go, 202, 201, 159, and I turned around and I whacked the advertisement board between the bench and me, and may have said a couple of expletives. And
Ash, one of the assistant coach?
Well, Ash was right there, and he gave me the two hands up. He's just like, "We're good." And I looked at him. I said, "Okay, we're good." And obviously, we're able to come back and win that game. But there's definitely these moments where I keep getting pulled back into, you know, that was very much an external moment. Of I was thinking about in that split second, I was thinking about some important people in my coaching life that would have been like, you know, basically if I had gone on to lose, or we, sorry, excuse me, had gone on to lose that game, that I was going to have to justify not blowing that time out, you know, and that's years and years and years of being competitive, wanting to win, wanting to do well for myself, wanting to do well for my team, wanting to do well for my program, my community, all those sorts of things. And I know it'll take more, you know, years and years and years to really grind that out. But I've been working very hard on it. But I think I've told this story before, but, you know, a few years back coaching Sandringham and NBL One, and we had no players, like, because even the two players that we ended up being able to get onto the roster in terms of had next level talent, they were injured, and we were up by 8 on Eltham. I think you guys might have actually been at that game.
I think we may have been
at Sandringham. We were up 8 at halftime, and I was like, "We're gonna beat this team that has 2 imports and 2 NBL players, and we got nobody." And again, you know, I'm into the external. I'm in the gratification of winning and what that would mean for whatever, myself and the group. And we end up losing. And after the game, I tore strips off the team, like in a really vulgar way, like something I was really disappointed at myself for being able to go to that place. I end up on Tuesday night, we had a team meeting. I remember apologizing to the group, and it's something that's continued to stick with me, because as hard as I try, and I'll keep trying, I have to get to that balance of winning versus development, external versus intrinsic, and continuing to put the most important things, like, you know, the team's well-being, the team's development, the community, those things have to come first. So it's an ongoing process.
And it is hard, because you've got to try and, like, one, stay in the moment, obviously, with what you're doing, but sort of block out the noise and not let your mind wander to those places as well. Because we've probably all been in games where it's like, hey, we have a double chance, but I'm down in this game. I don't want to be down in this game, but I know I have a double chance. It'll be okay. Like, that narrative straight away is not helpful to what you're doing at that moment in time. Like, those types of things. What are people going to think if I lose this game? Like, who cares? Like, honestly, who cares what people think? Like, they're going to care about it. Oh, did you see that team lost? Okay, moving on. it's right. That kind of thing. Like,
let's be honest here. There are people that go out and they get on social media, or they get on forums, and they love it. They love getting on their keyboard.
Sheldon Freud, I believe it's called. What was the opposite of that one again, Coops?
Mitch Freud.
There you go.
But the thing is, and it was that great saying, and again, because I'm terrible at remembering who says what. But, you know, you wouldn't take advice from somebody, criticism from somebody you wouldn't take advice from. And it's something you've got to remember. It's an unfortunate and awful part of any sport that you do have to know that people are going to have opinions and voice them like they're fact and all that sort of stuff without all the information. It's going to happen. So get okay with it. It took me a while to get it. I remember the first time I saw my name on one of those forums. Someone, I think it was something like, they're coached by Zoe Carr and she's terrible. And I cried. I cried.
Coops, you got to be more, you got to get a better username than NCB.
Stoic MCB. Yeah. NCB. That hurt me. And I cried. And then I realized, it took a while, but then I realized, who cares? Yeah. Who cares about them? You know, like, they are people that are willing to just get on a keyboard rather than, you know, step up and do the work. But I think from what Coops is saying too, that's really important to, whilst we're talking about mistakes, they're not necessarily mistakes we've been able to rectify. No, you know, like, everybody always has, and they'll all be different things, but everyone has career-long you know, elements of their coaching that they'll have to work on for the like the entire time. For me, it will be things like staying off the refs and keeping the emotion out of the game. I don't think I'm good at that yet, and I will continue to work on that. You know, for somebody who is a little more calm and in control of their emotions, their thing might be how to build a relationship. Because one of the things I'm proud to say is my emotion, my ability to be vulnerable, my ability to be open, and it helps me create relationships and really good relationships with athletes. So I'm proud of that. But the other side of it comes then with that emotion, that same emotion that causes me trouble. but
it's accurate.
But it's, you know, everyone has their own stuff that they're going to have to, and it's not something you're just going to flick a switch and fix.
Yeah,
it's you've got to, it's a continual working process, and you also, you know, be brave enough to say you're not good at some things.
Yeah,
like,
you can make mistakes, and that's okay. Like, it was something I saw, I was flicking through socials the other day, which I shuddered to think that I was doing, but it was a Tom Holland interview. And he was talking about it, and it was along the lines of, if you have a problem with me, text me. If you don't have my number, then you don't know me well enough to have a problem with me. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, that's actually pretty good. Like, it's, and there are some people that may have my number that I don't necessarily want to hear from anyway. And that's okay. But
they won't text you.
They won't text me, no. I can guarantee it. There's probably an email waiting for me, to be honest, which I'm getting to, I promise. But it's one of those things where you got to work out, like, yes, winning over development is clearly the wrong way to go in most situations. Now, if you're on a high performance level, obviously winning takes, like we saw it with Eddie Jones recently with the Australian rugby team, just resigned. He came back in after having been the head coach previously. Wasn't a great World Cup from the Wallabies, and he's resigned. Now, I would suggest that had a lot to do with winning over developing rather than trying to develop a team. You're at a World Cup, there's an expectation you win. So it does change a little bit in there, but you do have to be careful as to who you take criticism from, who you take compliments from, but you also don't need to validate yourself on a win. Like we've all won games where we sit there and say, I had absolutely nothing to do with this result. This was all the players that got it done, or the coach at the other end may have mucked something up that has then created an opportunity for your players to go and win. We're not responsible for all of it. And this is the thing, you can't take the credit if you're not willing to take the blame, and vice versa.
But also understanding too was a something I had to get okay with, because I've already spoken about how insecure I was as a coach, particularly in the beginning, and, you know, how people having opinions used to hurt my feelings and stuff like that. The thing is, though, even if you win that game, they're still going to have their opinions. So what helps you sleep at night? Is it that you know you've done right by your team, win or loss, or that you've tried to manufacture something to please other people that will never be pleased? Because I'll give you the hot tip. People that are, you know, on social media being keyboard warriors or on forums, they're not happy unless they're unhappy. So they will dig deep to find something to go you on. So just shut all that stuff out and do what helps you and what you're comfortable in and what helps your athletes, and you'll find you'll actually enjoy coaching a lot better.
Without a doubt. I just realised how long we've been going for here, and I've still got like eight other ones.
Part two!
There potentially will be a part two. Much like most of the films, we hope that part two will be better than the original. Like, can't always guarantee it.
Terminator. American Pie 2? That's
American
one of
Pie 2 was very
That was
good.
A good one.
Wayne's World 2?
Oh, solid, but didn't solid? Love it. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Which was the Bill and Ted? Was that Bogus
Journey?
Bogus Journey
was the second one.
Second one? Yeah, yep. I like Bogus Journey. Yeah. Like, weird tangent.
Okay,
once
back
again.
On track.
Yeah. So the other one, we'll circle back like to where this is coming from. Didn't balance out lifestyle with coaching. Like is something I think every coach under the sun is guilty of. I know the last couple of job offers I've had, I've knocked back purely because, and this will surprise nobody in this room, but in particular Zoe, when I'm coaching a team, I'm a very different person than when I'm not coaching a team. I'm fully invested in what's going on. I take everything very personally, despite everything we've spoken about to this point. I ride that roller coaster like there is no tomorrow. Like I am, like if players need me at 11 o'clock at night, I'm there for them at 11 o'clock at night. I'm there early for training sessions. I put all the prep work into a game. It impacts at some point. And you drop the ball. You miss a family event that you really should have gone to. You haven't checked in with your partner. You're absent even when you're present. Like it's those types of things that do happen. No shock. Like from my end in particular, when I'm not coaching, I actually live a fairly healthy lifestyle. Like, it's not too bad. Like, I get up, I exercise, I go to the gym, that sort of stuff. But anytime I start coaching again, it goes out the window because it's the first thing to go. So I eat poorly. Like, it's almost like a default setting. You drive out of the stadium and it's like, cool. I drive past two McDonald's, three KFCs and one Hungry Jack's.
Which and they're the only things that open.
Yeah, yeah. And a lot of the times, not even hungry, but you just get into that habit of what's going on and you just don't look after yourself, which impacts your physical health, which then in turn impacts your mental health. So it is something that I think we as coaches, we do tend to get burnt out because we're trying to be everything to everyone. It has an impact. You've got to balance. And there are times where it's just like, hey, assistant coach, you've got them this Tuesday night. I just need a night with the family, with or just separation in that sort of space. It's, you do have to look after yourself because if you're trying to be all things to everyone, you will burn the candle a little bit too close and you'll be nothing to anyone. So please do find a way to balance that out. What do you do, Coop? Like, how do you, like, I don't want to say de-stress, but how do you shut off basketball for a little while?
Well, funny enough, we were talking about this earlier, and this may hopefully resonate with a few people, that I had a really big fear of death, and it's one of the reasons I got into stoicism. And so basketball became a vehicle for me to create a legacy that would basically outlive my physical, you know, my physical form. And that was driving me to do exactly what you guys are talking about. Not sleep, eat poorly, watch more film, climb the ladder, care way too much on what other people thought. And it wasn't till, studying philosophy and having this beautiful baby girl and all these different things that happened in my life that allowed me just to switch my focus and start remembering, you know, what are the things that truly matter. And that was the turning point. That allowed me to come home. So I've got two phones. I have a work phone and I'll turn my work phone off. That's, you know, that's a good way for me to do it. My wife's fantastic. She is not sporty at all. And so instead of watching another basketball game, we'll watch Below Deck. I know that's just wow. What we're doing at the moment. I know. Look, I'm not proud of it.
All the reality shows.
I'm not proud of it, but that's just where we're at. But look, it does. It allows me to be away from the space. It allows me to be with her because she likes that and we can talk about that. I can spend time with my daughter. And it was taking the time to do a really kind of a big shift in just understanding what was important to me. So when it is time to switch off, I can just go to that place. Okay, what's really important now? Do I need to watch another basketball game or do I need to have some family time or read a book or, you know, go listen to some music, whatever it may be? And that's been really helpful. So I suggest that to lots of people to just do that that self-reflection.
Yep, absolutely. What about you, Zach?
I go on 3-week European holidays.
Excellent choice. Yeah.
No, Turns out it costs her a lot to do.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. But as much as I joke, it's just that what I'm more mean is just get away from the game. Like get away from – and from like our perspective, we all work in the sport as well. So where it used to be you'd work – a job that had nothing to do with basketball and then you'd go and do basketball because it was your hobby. Now it is genuinely our life. So I was horribly burnt out before our last trip to the point where I didn't like basketball. I didn't like anyone in it. Present company excluded. No, I didn't like. I just didn't like any of it. You know, the same things that used to drive me weren't. And I started to really worry, like, what's going on here? And then I was like, just make it to the holiday. Got to the holiday, had that time away, and came back just pumped, like right ready. Almost like it was like hitting reset. And it doesn't have to be 3 weeks in Europe. I'm not saying that. But, you know, even if it is just a week or a weekend or something where – because travel, trying new things, eating great food and taking photos and things like that, I really enjoy that away from sport. And so I came back with a full cup. And so I'm probably at about – half at the moment now. Need another one.
It's been 3 weeks.
But also carving out time. You speak about, you know, relationships and things like that. Carving out time to make sure you're with your family And because whilst you can have the most supportive partner, wife, husband, you know, it can grind. Like, it can really get to them and cause added stress that you don't need. Like, for us, for example, I think we've been back for 2 months now. I think we've had 4 full days together. And so where we haven't had to work in some capacity or coach in some capacity. So that's not ideal, but at least we're in the same sort of it's sort of space to be able to get that done. But it's making sure you do carve out that time, and when you are with those people or with family, whether it's your immediate partner or whether it's with brothers, sisters, you know, parents, all that sort of stuff, it's, yeah, you've got to be in a position where you are present with them and, you know, not just a zombie. Because pre the holiday, I'd go to sort of family events, nieces and nephews who mean the absolute world to me, but I'd go to their birthday parties and just sit there and just be like, like, I was.
Please don't ask me questions about basketball.
And it was a case of please don't talk to me. Not from a I felt like I was being pulled in a million different directions, and I was constantly having to speak to people or having them speak to me. And so even sometimes just having time in a room alone by myself, whether you want to be Ron Swanson and say it's not meditating, or whether you want to actually meditate and take that time just to carve it out, even if it's 5 minutes by yourself, and just focus on your breath, bring yourself back, and it makes a huge difference. You know, I'm ashamed to say I've only been doing something like that for about a week now, but I feel so much. I feel the benefits in that, and it's like 5 minutes, probably a day, and it's, yeah, it's. I used to think it was sort of all a crock, but no, I'm definitely on the bandwagon now. So I think that's what's going to get me through to the next holiday, and yeah, but it goes against what we are as coaches, because we're givers and we want to fill other people's cups. But if we're not looking after our own, then we're going to be on empty. And that's when problems really start to arise, because that's where people snap. Yep. And when you snap, that's when, you know, you lose positions or lose roles or lose friendships or relationships. So, yeah.
That makes sense. That does wrap us up for, I'll say, part one, because there's a reasonable chance we'll come back for part two on this one. Thank you both for sharing a lot of the stuff today. I know this is not a comfortable space for a lot of people to sit there and say, yeah, I butchered that one, and try and be better from it. But it is something that I think is valuable, because there will be a lot of other coaches out there who go, oh, I've done that. Yeah, I've done that too. Yeah, I'm doing that now. It'll be that sort of stuff. So, coaches, please do look after yourselves in that matter. It is something that is very important to be able to reflect on what we do and why we do it and how we do it and how we can be better at it, because we are trying to be all things to everyone. So please look after yourselves out there. In particular, the last half, take some time for yourself. We are coming up to the Christmas period, obviously. It's not far away. I heard the first Mariah Carey the other day, so you know it's getting close. It is one of those things where you do have to take some time for yourself as well and be the best version of yourself so that you can help other people. But thank you all very much for listening. Once again, smack that follow button on the podcast, and we will catch everyone next week on the Talking Split Pod. Look, tune in and join the tribe.